And on a previous occasion, the Al Jazeera channel asked a question to a religious figure in Tripoli, in the city in northern Lebanon. He said, no, there is no such plan to make all people in Lebanon Shia. And we thank him for that. It was also said in Egypt, and not long ago, they asked a question to the Mufti, the main religious figure in Egypt, and he said also, there is no plan to spread the Shiite religion in Egypt. So on what basis are these allegations based on? They also said there are 100,000s or tens of thousands of Sunnis in Syria who became Shiites, and they tried to use this, to take advantage of this in their confrontation with the Syrian government, with the Syrian regime. Where is your evidence? Show me names. This is something which they are trying to do. They, of course, are trying to promote such allegations in many different regions. And unfortunately, some religious figures actually buy this information, are actually believing this. And after they believe it, they begin with a confrontation. But there's no basis for believing such allegations. Today in the Arab and Islamic world, not in Lebanon, but everywhere, there is internet, television, books. Of course, you can get information from wherever you want. You have access to the information from everyone. Everyone, of course, can present his information, can present his point of view, his perspectives. You see events in the world, of course. Some people from the Shiite faction might be affected and become Sunni, and some Sunnis might be affected and become Shia. But we haven't found in any country, and I would like to speak very decisively before I speak to the general situation in the world today. But let me tell you something very decisively before that. Neither Hezbollah nor any other Islamic resistance movement, and I can say very decisively as well, even the Islamic Republic of Iran, and especially Imam Khamenei, may God keep him with us, even the high-ranking religious Shiite figures, all of these people, all of these countries, have no such plan to spread the Shiite religious sect, to spread the Shiite religion. There are no such allegations. There is no true basis for such allegations. They're overreacting, and this is not precise. But when they do make these allegations, they have foundations for confrontation. And when this happens, the voices are raised. But these voices are not raised when in 22 days in the Gaza Strip, more than 1,200 1,300 Palestinians are killed, who are Sunnis, of course. Now, when it comes to these Sunnis being killed, those who speak about spreading Shia, they don't raise their voices against the killing of these Sunnis. Now, when they say there is a person who is Sunni who became a Shiite, I can tell you also that there are people who were Shia who became Sunnis and even became hard extremist Sunnis as well. So, of course, they use such issues to lay the foundations for a confrontation, and this must be stopped. And we must deal with such subjects in reality. And so, based upon this, after speaking about this, I'd like to speak about the political situation. Yes, we support Arab consensus, Arab unity, and Islamic unity. Any Arab reconciliation between two Arab countries, or three, or four, or five Arab countries, any such Arab reconciliation is a required reconciliation. And we must support such a reconciliation. And I can tell you very clearly that these reconciliations should not lead us to worry. Some people are worrying because of this reconciliation. I read, of course, some documents from the March 14 group, which said that after the reconciliation, the latest summit we saw in Riyadh, that Hezbollah must look for his head, meaning Hezbollah must watch himself. What's this supposed to mean? Where do these people live? On which planet do they live? It seems that the March 14 are looking for their head, are trying to watch themselves, and I think that we must do the same. I any Arab reconciliation or Arab unity is something which benefits us all. Arab reconciliation strengthens us all, and we support Arab reconciliation. And we don't think that Arab reconciliation is something to worry about. In the same way, we call for the Arabs who will participate in the Arab summit in Doha at the end of this month. We call on them to lend their hands, of course, to shake hands with those who support the Arab causes, such as Iran, Turkey. The Arabs must extend their hands to countries like Iran and Turkey. What is strange concerning our Arabs is that any people who are oppressed look for someone, look for some country to support them. The people who are oppressed look for somebody to support them. But we, when someone comes to support us, we Arabs, when someone comes to support us, we behave in a hostile way towards this side, towards sides which want to support us. Isn't it good for the Arabs when Venezuela comes to support the Arab rights? So should we be hostile towards Venezuela for the sake of Bush? Of course, Bush is gone now, but just for the sake of argument. If any country in the world, any country, whatever be the religious ideology or the cultural ideology, whatever be the identity, the cultural identity of this country, if any country whatsoever comes and says, I want to support the Arabs' rights, and says, I want to stand side by side with the Palestinians, I want to help you achieve victory for the Arab causes, if any country says this, how do we react? We must react in a positive way. It's our duty in this world to look for someone who supports the Arab rights, the Arab causes. Today, Iran is supporting the Arabs' rights and its causes. Turkey now, recently, is also doing the same thing. There are countries in the world also who are supporting our rights and our causes, and the number of these countries will increase, and will not decrease, hopefully. But we as Arabs, we as Arab people, as Arab governments, we must extend the hand of cooperation and of friendship, the hand of support to these people. We must not react by behaving in a hostile way and by accusing these countries. And also in this context, what is going on today in Cairo, the dialogue between the Palestinian factions, this dialogue has the support of everyone. Yes, there are complications. There are Palestinian complications which the Palestinians themselves must address. They must address these problems with wisdom, with courage, with flexibility. But when some come and start pointing fingers of accusation to this country or that country, to this ally or that ally, and accuse these countries of disrupting the reconciliation, this is not just, this is injustice. We know, as Hezbollah, for example, we know this experience. And this goes for all the Lebanese opposition as well, not just Hezbollah. And this also goes for the Palestinian factions, which are accused of being allies with us and with Iran and Syria. But let me tell you, nobody intervenes. We don't intervene, nor does Iran, nor does Syria. None of us intervenes with the Palestinian factions and dictates on them what to do. The Palestinians decide what to do. They agree amongst themselves. And this is something which everyone must believe. I can tell you, nobody intervenes in the Palestinian internal situation. This is reality. And so we in Hezbollah, we, of course, would like to show our solidarity with all those sides, with all those who call on the Palestinian brothers to do their utmost, to do all they can in order to reach unity, in order to reach solidarity, in order to reach consensus, so that they can exit and put an end to the divisions which we witnessed amongst these Palestinian factions. Also, there is a detailed point which I'd like to point your attention to. We are not only calling for unity in politics, but I would like to highlight that some Arab media outlets, unfortunately, and even some Lebanese media outlets, actually, some of these media outlets try to accuse Hezbollah in intervening in what happened in Gaza and launching some rockets to Gaza. I would like to tell you, and I'd like to tell the whole world, that Hezbollah has no soldiers in Gaza, has no forces in Gaza. We have relations and ties with all the factions. We have, of course, brotherly relations. We have trustworthy relations, and we support them. And we do not intervene in their affairs. They are the ones who decide. So we do not have any military existence in Gaza. We don't want anyone to dictate what we do on our battlefield. And so the same way we do not intervene in the battlefield of others, we do not dictate to others what goes on their battlefield. So we didn't have any intervention in Gaza. We believe that we are the brothers of the Palestinian resistance, and it is our duty to help as much as we can, to help our brothers as much as we can, not more than that. The interest is what is decided by the Palestinian resistance leadership. The leadership of the Palestinian resistance decides a truce, or decides to launch rockets, or decides to go ahead with military operations. And any intervention from anyone is a disruption and is a harming of the Palestinian cause. And we are committed to this Palestinian cause, and we believe any intervention in the Palestinian cause is betrayal. And this is also illegitimate from a religious and jihadi perspective. So we do not intervene. So in the same perspective as well, we must shed light on the decision made by the International Court concerning the arrest warrant of the Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir, the International Criminal Court, of course. We in Hezbollah, we condemned this decision, and today on this occasion, once again, I condemn this decision by the International Criminal Court. And I'd like to tell you very frankly that this court has not proven any time that it is a just court, that it behaves with justice. It has not proven that it behaves outside the political lines. So for this reason, nobody, none of us, must respect the decisions made by this court. It's always work on political lines. Concerning al-Bashir, they said that they went and investigated in Darfur, and they said that there were women and children who were killed by the Sudanese army or by Sudanese militias after they were given orders by the Sudanese president. But this court, this international court, which does not need any investigation, because there were many crimes which were committed and are still being committed, and you see these crimes being committed on your television screens. In the July 2006 war, for 33 days, we saw the Israeli crimes in Lebanon, the killing of the women, the children, the elderly, the destruction of villages. Of villages, not streets, villages, whole villages. And this was done after Olmert and Livni gave the orders, and Halotz gave the orders. But what did the International Court do about this? Nothing. It doesn't need an investigation, because we saw what happened on the television screens. There is a direct responsibility. And look at what happened in Gaza as well. All the people witnessed what happened in Gaza. More than 1,300 martyrs, half of them, or more than half of them, women and children. And Israel was the one who gave the orders, the Israeli leadership. But the International Criminal Court, not even one judge of this court, none of them did anything. None of them opened their mouths and said one word towards these Israeli crimes. The first Qana massacre doesn't need an investigation. The second Qana massacre doesn't need an investigation. And the same thing when we speak about the former American President Bush or the American military leaders. Every day, day after day, we see 30 killed, 40 killed, 50 wounded, 100 wounded civilians in Afghanistan and in Pakistan and sometimes in Iraq. And then what they say, their justification is, it was a mistake. That's what they say. That's their excuse. The information was misleading. We had a problem in the intelligence information. Should we allow mistakes in intelligence information to kill hundreds of thousands of Iraqi civilians and Afghani civilians and Pakistani civilians? Hundreds of thousands of civilians were killed. But this international court didn't do anything towards this. So here we must focus not on just President al-Bashir, we must focus on the principle. This international court, is it the court which is suitable? Is it an independent judicial body? Or is it a body, is it an international institution which is being used and taken advantage of for political aims, for political goals, to serve certain political interests in the world? Sudan is being targeted. It has been targeted for many years. Sudan is targeted in its unity, and Sudan is targeted in its natural resources. It's water, it's oil. Sudan is targeted on more than one level. And Sudan stood with perseverance during these last few years. And today, we have a new conspiracy. So, this issue must be very clear. It's not to condemn the decision of the ICC, but we must say that this is a big problem. This is a shame on the ICC and Mr. Ocampo, for those people who disregard the massacres which lead to the killing of hundreds of thousands in more than one Arab and Muslim country, and they do not pay attention to any of this, but they try and arrest a president based upon accusations which have not even been proven. This is the big problem. And this could be repeated, yes. And it's the right of anyone who is targeted, anyone who is targeted by the American administration and by the Zionist project or the Zionist scheme, it's the right of any person who is targeted to look suspiciously and to view suspiciously any of these institutions who do not behave on a judicial basis but who behave on a political basis. These institutions are looking for any excuse to, of course, target certain leaders. And now I would like to speak about the situation in Lebanon. We, of course, are in the run-up to the Lebanese parliamentary elections, and I would like to stress and highlight the importance of a stable environment, of a peaceful environment, Lebanon. Now the atmosphere is peaceful, although we have had some problems here and there, but in general, it's a peaceful atmosphere in the run-up to the elections. But I'd like to, of course, point your attention to the magnification or the overreaction to some security incidents which are happening. Sometimes we have security incidents occurring in Lebanon. These incidents used to happen before the elections, months before, even before the year 2005, even when there was political stability in Lebanon, we used to have security incidents in this country. But to overreact, to try and magnify the picture and to make accusations, make baseless accusations from any side whatsoever, I don't want to accuse a certain side, but to make false accusations won't do anything except increase tension in the country. But until now, what's happened, the incidents which have happened are individual incidents, not incidents based on a political decision. Sometimes, of course, we discover that a media campaign is launched based on false information gathered because of incidents which involved individuals, which has nothing to do whatsoever with a political decision. So I wanted to point out to this. I wanted to point out to the danger of magnifying or overreacting to security incidents. Of course, the Lebanese security services must look into these issues. Now, in the south, for example, I'd like to speak about one example. From time to time, they say there is a car for someone or for some group, and this car is blown up or is burnt. And then they come and accuse a certain political group of being behind this incident. How do you know? Where's your evidence? Who says that you are burning this curse. Who knows if it's not you? I cannot accuse you, nor can I accuse anyone else. Why do you behave so hastily and accuse someone, accuse a certain side or a certain group? Sometimes we do have security incidents, and we must discover what happened, what led to these incidents. But in the end, these incidents are small, limited, and individual incidents. And we must not use these incidents to launch political campaign before the elections, in the run-up to the elections. Some people say that these incidents aim for the foreigners, the Lebanese who live outside Lebanon, not to come to Lebanon to participate in the elections. So when these sides use a certain incident and based upon these incidents build political theories, these sides themselves are preventing the Lebanese from coming inside Lebanon. Those people who are launching the media campaigns, they are the ones who are preventing Lebanese who are living outside to come and participate in the Lebanese elections. So we must, of course, put an end to this. We must address any security incident with responsibility and with cooperation. And we must cooperate with the security agencies and with the judicial authorities to preserve the peace of our country so that we can go to the elections in a normal way, in a peaceful manner. Now, in the same context as well, there are certain parties in Lebanon who say that the opposition, the Lebanese opposition, is behind these incidents. Why? Because the Lebanese opposition wants to disrupt the electoral process. This is very funny as well. If there are elections and if the opposition does not win, what do we get? We don't get anyone. We're not the majority now. We are the opposition now. Lebanon, in between brackets, even if we are victorious in the next elections, in Lebanon, the parliamentary majority does not mean a popular majority, whoever may be in the majority in the parliament. This is due to the political system, the Taif agreement in Lebanon. Parliamentary majority does not reflect popular majority in the country. So if the opposition does not win the next elections, it has not lost anything. Of course, those who are making these accusations, they are the ones who can lose, not the opposition. Today, the March 14, they are the majority. They are in the leadership. And of course, concerning the one-third majority or one-third plus one, we've spoken about this a lot. But if elections take place and we do not become majority, what have we lost? We haven't lost anything because we are opposition now. But the elections are a chance for the opposition to become a majority. That's the only chance it has. And so for this reason, it is very logical that the opposition is, of course, more enthusiastic and wants the elections to take place on its designated date, because we are the ones who have to gain. We are the ones who are in the opposition and want to gain to be the majority. And another point which I'd like to highlight, which is not about Lebanon only, but of course in general, about the situation, the new American stance. We can't say it's not a new stance, it is a new stance. A new American stance concerning a possibility of dialogue with Hezbollah and Hamas, but with two conditions. Of course, these people, the Americans, they put conditions, they impose conditions for dialogue. The first condition is to recognize Israel. The second condition is to renounce violence. And I'd like to comment briefly on this. First of all, America, when it agrees to hold dialogue with any side, with any group, with conditions or without conditions, especially when the conditions start to become less and less, America does this not because of its ethics, but because of the failure of the United States of America in achieving its aims in the region. It has been proven that all the attempts which were made to isolate Syria and, of course, to put Syria in the corner, to change the situation in Syria, to change the behavior, to change the situation in Syria, all of these plots have failed. The boycotting of Syria, all of these plots have failed. and then they decided, okay, let's go to dialogue. So it's not ethical behavior, because Syria stood with perseverance, because Syria is a major player in the region, they decided to go with dialogue with Syria. Iran, for 30 years after the Islamic Revolution, 8 years of a war and 22 years of isolation. But Iran is increasing in strength. Iran has reached space, has made a lot of advancements. Iran is self-reliant militarily, in the civilian sphere as well, and they also fear Iran's nuclear capabilities. So the isolation of Iran, the pressure on Iran, all of this also has not benefited America. If you want to talk to them, you must go ahead and talk to them. Iran and Syria are important players, and arrogant behavior has proven itself to be a behavior which leads to failures. The same goes for the political movements, and especially the resistance movements in the region. If the resistance movements were defeated, if they were weak, if they had not achieved victory, why would they have said that we want to have dialogue with the resistance movements? They do not have dialogue with any weak sides or weak groups. This is on one side. On the other hand, when we speak about the conditions, okay, Hezbollah is on the terrorist list. And Hezbollah, as the name, the Hezbollah on the terrorist list, many of Hezbollah's institutions are on the terrorist list. Even Hezbollah's television outlet is on the terrorist organization. The Wa'ad organization, which is for reconstruction, is on the terrorist organization, terrorist list. There are many different names as well, such as Imad Mughniyye, may peace be upon his soul, many different names of our brothers, me and some of my colleagues, our names are also on the terrorist list. Let me tell you what the Americans are concerned with in our region. The Americans say that you who are accused with terrorism activities, we will forgive you, let's forget the past. So if you accuse us of being behind the bloodshed of Americans, they will forgive us for this. If they accuse us of being behind terrorism, they want to forgive us for these terrorist activities. So what the Americans are saying to us is, let's forget the past, and what concerns us now is just recognize Israel. This is the whole thing. What concerns America in this region is Israel. If you recognize Israel and renounce violence, what does renounce violence mean? Renounce violence means renounce resistance. Recognize Israel, abandon resistance, and we'll forget the past. This is what the Americans are saying. If you allow me here to make a joke, those who are very happy with the American delegations, when these delegations come to Beirut, let me tell them very clearly, if we were to open dialogue with America and if we were to recognize Israel and renounce violence, they would always stay in the southern suburbs of Beirut where Hezbollah exists. They would also be in southern Beirut meeting with us if we had behaved in the way they want us. The Americans, of course, behave according to their interests. They have no permanent enemies. They do not behave according to any ethical basis. These are the Americans. That's the way the Americans behave. But I, of course, do not want to make big political stances, but very clearly I'd like to say that the question, before America imposes conditions on Hezbollah to hold dialogue, we want to ask Hezbollah, is Hezbollah ready for dialogue with the Americans? This is a question we must ask. And if Hezbollah is ready for a dialogue with the Americans without conditions, does Hezbollah itself have conditions for this dialogue? The American conditions, these are conditions which have been repeated. And of course, we do not accept these conditions which were imposed by the Americans. Today, on this occasion of the birth of the Prophet Muhammad, on this holy occasion, today and tomorrow and after 1 year and after 100 years, after 1,000 years, until the day of judgment, we and our children and our grandsons, as long as we are Hezbollah, we cannot and we will not recognize Israel. What does Israel mean? What does Israel mean? What does Israel mean? What does Israel mean? You can call it what you want. Israel has stolen territories of a people. Israel is an illegitimate country. Israel is a racist state. Israel is a state of hostility, a terrorist state. Whatever you want to say, any Muslim or any Arab can describe it as it wants. How can any Muslim or Arab recognize Israel and say, yes, this is Israel? And three quarters or more than three quarters of Israel are people who came from all parts of the world. But those who are the real righteous people, those who lived in those territories in the Palestinian Tories, the Muslims and the Christians, those people must leave and must give up. This is what the Americans are saying. How can we accept this? Religiously, ethically, from a humanitarian perspective, how can we accept this? How? Based upon what standards can we accept recognizing Israel? In one way, the Arab tribes which were defeated by Abraha, okay, if this happens, yes, okay, then what can we do? We will give up. We will surrender. This is Israel. Only in this way can Israel be recognized. Israel is strong and America supports Israel. And so just like was said in the previous times, we cannot confront strong armies. And so let's leave our sanctities, leave them to Abraham. Just like what happened during the lifetime of the Prophet Muhammad. Only in this way can Israel be recognized if we surrender. Anyone who says we cannot stand up to Israel and Israel has the support of America, so we have no choice. And the only way to behave reality, logically, etc., etc., the only way, and look, they try to look for many different justifications, the only way is hence to recognize Israel. Only in this logic can we reach the conclusion of recognizing Israel. So the only means and the only standards which make us recognize Israel is the feeling of defeat. Any feeling of defeat leads us to recognize Israel only. Anyone who considers himself incapable, only he will recognize Israel. But if we believe that we are not weak, and if we believe that we can make accomplishments, if we believe that we are strong, if we believe that we are capable and we are strong, and if we believe that we stand on our own two feet, if we believe that we confront, if we believe that we stand shoulder to shoulder, side by side, we are capable of defeating this entity and we are capable of wiping this entity from existence. The Americans say the Americans support Israel. If Americans support Israel, Allah, God supports us. God supported us in the July 2006 war and supported us in the war on Gaza. If the Americans support them, let the Americans now solve their own problems. The Americans have their problems today. We don't know where is America going to now. America has a lot of problems, economical problems, its influence in the world. Even this issue about dialogue, you must always take into consideration that the Americans cannot do anything in these 2 or 3 years. So let's make dialogue. They want to look at their financial catastrophe. Can this catastrophe be addressed or not? This is also an assumption. So don't believe that any real dialogue could happen. There's a chance that this real dialogue might not happen in the in these 2 or 3 years. So I would like to answer those. All those who want to impose conditions for dialogue on us, we will not recognize a country named Israel. There are two points. One time they say not recognizing Israel. Nobody is saying let's go to war. If you cannot go to war, just don't recognize Israel. If you cannot fight, don't recognize Israel. Don't promote this truth. Don't give Israel legitimacy. If our generation cannot fight, the next generation will fight, or the generation after that will fight. Why must we confess to defeat? If we are incapable of confrontation, then let's not go to confrontation. But why must we give legitimacy to the occupation and to the terrorism? This is a logic which we speak about. This is our language. This is our logical language. But as long as there is a terrorist, greedy, hostile entity, the resistance will not only continue with this stance against Israel, but our dignity and our life and our existence will always be of utmost importance, will always be our priority. And anyway, after the Americans take away these conditions, then we will answer if we are ready for this dialogue and what our conditions are for dialogue. Who said that we don't have our conditions ourselves? I don't want to speak about these conditions today, but we might have our conditions. And so this is our stance and our position on this occasion of the birth of the Holy Prophet Muhammad on these holy days. We call for brotherly relations amongst all Muslims. We call for solidarity amongst Muslims. We call for positive competition for the sake of this ummah and for the sake of defending the sanctities and the holiness of this ummah. And I call on God to help us to take our responsibilities. We hope that we will behave with responsibility. Once again, I would like to congratulate you for this holy occasion, of course, and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.